The Elections, Finance, and Government Operations
Committee is now called to order. Has anyone had an opportunity to review the minutes?
Just had to ask, Mr. Chair.
I have, but you won't let me make any motions.
Representative Davis, okay.
Oh, I can.
Representative Altendorf.
Chair Quam, I move the approval of the March.
Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Minutes are approved. And is Representative Rarick, please step forward to the testifier table. I noticed that there are two testifiers, Mr. Downer and Grinnell. If the two testifiers want to join, and then what I will do is I will move House File 1345 before the committee for consideration and to the author.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my testifiers have just walked in, and I'll have them come up. So this is House File 1345, and the City of Buffalo actually brought this concern to me. And this is our city administrator, and do you want to pull up a chair next to me? And my mayor, so the City of Buffalo mayor, and he will introduce himself also. So the City of Buffalo is a municipal utility, and they have had a little bit of a quorum issue, as many cities have across the state of Minnesota, with their PUC. So they have a municipal PUC. And so this bill is not just to help Buffalo, but to help all of those cities statewide that have PUCs. There are about 58 PUCs across the state, about half of the membership of MMUA. So this bill would allow them to increase their membership from 3 to either 5 or 7. And there have been about 13 cities that have come before the legislature in the past to ask for that change. This is, instead of doing an individual one just for the City of Buffalo, this is allowing anybody that has, so any of the 58 that wants to make a change, that they would be allowed to. With that, Mr. Chair, as we were reviewing the bill, I do have a concern, and I would like to offer an oral amendment, and I believe that the nonpartisan staff has something prepared. She has, Ms. Griffin has either option one or option two, and I believe the second option is probably the more preferable one as it gets to the issue. And my issue, Mr. Chair, is on line 1.8, when it says no more than one member can be chosen from the city council, from the council membership. And instead of only one, I wanted to change it to two when you change the overall PUC membership of either 5 or 7. So I would like to offer that oral amendment if you'd be so inclined, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Griffin.
Chair Quam and members, the oral amendment is page 1, line 9, before the period, insert for a commission with 3 members, comma, and no more than 2 members may be chosen from the council membership for a commission with 5 or 7 members.
Representative Freiberg, I was wondering if you had any issues about this amendment.
I'm sorry, I was getting my materials. Could you just restate the amendment?
Ms. Griffin.
Sure. Chair Quam and members. So the oral amendment is on page 1, line 9, before the period, insert, for a commission with 3 members, comma, and no more than 2 members may be chosen from the council membership for a commission with 5 or 7 members.
Representative Freiberg.
So just to clarify, for a 3-member commission, that means only one can be appointed?
Ms. Griffin.
Chair Quam and members, yes, that's correct.
Okay.
President Freiberg.
I think that's fine for purposes of putting the bill in the shape the author would like.
Okay. Any further discussion on the amendment? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. What author can speak to the bill as amended?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me to do that quick oral amendment. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to my testifiers. There are also a couple concerns with paragraph C on line 2.3 through 2.8. And in their testimony, they'll speak to that. And I believe we're going to be laying the bill over so that we can have a little bit more conversation about that, Mr. Chair. So with that, I'll turn it over to my testifiers. And with the mayor or... Okay, we're going to go to my city administrator.
Please state your name and proceed.
All right, thank you. Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Quam and committee members, and thank you, Representative Rarick, for drafting, for authorizing the bill. My name is Taylor Gronau. I am the city administrator for the city of Buffalo, and I am here today to testify in support of House File 1345, which increases the allowable number of public utility commission members for statutory cities. The city of Buffalo owns and operates its own municipal electric, water, sewer, and fiber utilities. Together, these utilities have a budget of just over $37 million and comprise about 58% of the city's overall budget. Full authority of the governance of for these utilities is vested in a five-member city council. We're looking to create a commission with a larger membership than the statute currently allows. So current statute states membership is limited to three members, one of which can be a member of the city council. Given the size and complexity of our municipal utilities, we believe a larger commission is appropriate for our situation. This is not uncommon. As Representative Rarick mentioned, there are 13 other instances of this taking place across the state, and this legislature has allowed these cities to create larger utility commissions via special legislation. So this bill would provide cities like Buffalo the additional flexibility to determine the size of our local public utilities commission, what is most appropriate for our cities, and what best meets our needs without the need to seek special legislative approval. So I appreciate the time and effort Representative Rarick and staff had put into developing this bill, and thank you again for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you. Did the author have another testifier? They're waiting in case there are questions. Author.
Mr. Chair, he's currently the mayor of Buffalo, and he actually worked at MMUA for 32 years. So he actually worked in this part of law at MMUA in his private sector job. And so he's here also for technical support. But we have the current government relations person from MUA that would like to testify as well, Mr. Chair. But my mayor is here mostly for any additional questions.
Well, thank you. State your name and begin your testimony.
Chair Quam, members of the committee, I'm Ken Sulem with the Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association. And this bill was made our attention early on Friday. We vetted it quickly with our government relations advisory group. And most of the concerns that we had were addressed in the oral amendment. We've had, unfortunately, most of the time when there's a commission, things work very well, and it helps the utility function at a very efficient level. There have been, in recent years, a couple of situations where there's been some shenanigans to pack the council or pack the commission and make problems when there's a battle between the commission and the council, and we wanted to make sure that this bill wouldn't give extra abilities to do that. And with the amendment, that takes care of our concern for that. The concern over paragraph C is just a matter of deciding the right place so that there is some oversight over the changes. So things are just happening, you know, 1 year they pass it, 1 year they repeal it. There needs to be some sort of internal oversight or external oversight to protect the interests of the whole, and that's what we'll be working with Representative Rarick on. We do appreciate this bill and the fact that it does bring the local autonomy into call. That it's something that will be helpful for the 121 electric utilities around the state.
If I'm interpreting the testifier correctly, when you've got three, you only need two to pack.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Chair Quam, many members. Yes, that is correct.
Representative Akam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Rarick. This is an interesting bill, and I learned some things in the last few days looking into it. I reached out to the Legislative Reference Library to get a little bit of background about how many cities have this, and information I got was 61 instead of 58, but close. We're close to each other, so whatever that means. But my question for Mr. Sulem is, in terms of your concerns of packing the commission, in the 13 changes that were made individually through the utilities, were there any instances of that occurring with their changes?
Mr. Solom, and also if there's a difference between the 58 and the 61, curious if that's made up by cities of the first class. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, Representative Akam, I'm sorry, can you repeat your question one more time?
Representative Akam.
Thank you. Of course I can. So my question was, you had brought up the notion of concerns of stacking a commission, wondering if any of the previous 13 that have been changed already individually, if that occurred in those situations.
There is one case where that happened. It was a very interesting, I mean, if you're a political science buff, it was interesting to watch, but I had outcomes we'd just assume that occur again, where the first motion was made to abolish the commission altogether. The voters shot that down 3-1, and then 6 or 7 people gained control of the city council, packed the commission, and sold the utility out from under the residents. There was quite a bit of protest afterwards, but it was too late at that time to do anything. So having things balanced the way they are with that, we don't believe that's the concern under this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, to answer your question, the first-class cities, Duluth is a municipal gas utility, but none of the first-class cities are municipal electric.
Thank you. Representative Coulter.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just curious, you explained the reasons for why Buffalo would seek to expand their membership. Just curious for why, what would be the reasons why a city in this case might decrease the size of membership? Do you have any ideas on that?
To the author.
Well, thank you, Representative Coulter, for the question, Mr. Chair. I don't know why one would decrease it unless you follow the story of what Mr. Sulem just said, where they're trying to have more control. The city council is trying to have undue control over the PUC. And that's, I think, the biggest concern. But, you know, I'm trying to make this as local government friendly as I can. And so that's why I've asked for the bill to be laid over so we can work on that paragraph C. It's an interesting balance. Representative Coulter, it's a really interesting balance for me. So in the past, looks like 13 cities have come to the legislature and specifically asked for a change of their city's PUC. And this is just allowing a little bit more local control. So if they want to do it, they can, but they have to follow these procedures. And we're just trying to figure out in paragraph C how that can be accomplished and still give them their autonomy. But I think it's more to the story that was already offered.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Solon.
I'd just like to correct myself. Rochester, of course, is now a city of the first class and has a municipal electric. So,
Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate that, Representative Rarick. And I'm not super familiar with local PUCs. I am more familiar with city council appointments to boards and commissions. And I think part of where my concern, I'm glad you're still going to work on the language, part of where my concern arises is sort of the opposite side of the coin from packing this local PUC is I could certainly see a city council in a less than scrupulous way saying, hey, we don't like the decisions that are being made here, so we're just going to X out 2 members or however many so the folks we want stay on. So I think that's just not that I, of course, would ever do that, but I think that is certainly something that I could foresee. So that I would just suggest that you think about that frame as well as you move forward with it. Thank you.
Well, it's very advantageous that the bill is being laid over in order to you know, work on some of the fine details, and, you know, the author can nod or respond yes or no if that would be included in what she wants to make the fix.
So, Mr. Chair, we are going to make sure that this bill is good for the entire state and all 61. So I think the 58 number was my mayor who retired in 22, and so there may be a change in the number, but whether it's 58 or 61, it's right around that number. It's about 50% of those that have municipal utilities. So we want to make sure that we do this correctly for all of them, and 13 have specifically, out of that number, have specifically come to the legislature for that change. And I certainly could have done that, but I thought, well, let's do it for the whole state. But in so doing, we want to make sure we get it done right, too. So we will lay it over, and we'll figure out the fine-tuning of it.
Are there any members of the audience which want to join in with testifying? Seeing none, any further questions from members? Then I will renew the motion to lay House File 1345 over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
As amended. Thank you very much. Next would be a very important House File 71. And if the author would proceed to the testifying table. I don't see any listed testifiers, so if there were people that were wishing to speak, they could sit in the chairs behind the testifier table. And the author can proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Representative Nathan Coulter. I serve District 51B. So House File 71 is a pretty simple, straightforward bill that would establish a working group to examine the process for filing campaign finance reports, for local candidates, those running for county, city, school district, and township offices. So currently, candidates for federal office file with the Federal Elections Commission, the FEC, and candidates for state office file with the State Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. But candidates for local office file with a number of different authorities, and sometimes candidates for the same office, depending on the size or location, may file in different places. And the result is that information can be very, very difficult to find. I can tell you, as somebody who has run for city council twice, it is often very difficult for folks to find campaign finance reports for candidates for local office. And it also may rely on staff who are educated in many things and do good work, but may not be particularly familiar with the requirements for filing campaign finance reports. So this working group would explore the possibility of all local candidates filing with the State Campaign Finance Board, what funding and infrastructure might be required, how that information may be accessed, ease of use, and whether or not even this is a policy choice, that the legislature may want to make. This is detailed in the bill, but membership of this working group would include two campaign finance board members from different political parties, the executive director of the campaign finance board, one member each appointed by the League of Minnesota Cities, Association of Minnesota Counties, Minnesota Association of Townships, and the Minnesota School Board Association, and one legislator appointed by each caucus within the legislature. And then a report would be due no later than January 15th of 2026. So that, in brief, is the bill. Happy to... I do have an amendment. Maybe we want to do that right now.
Okay, the author has an amendment to get the bill in the order of which the author desires.
Correct. So this is Proceed. The E2 amendment. And just very briefly, what it does is recognize that currently, hopefully... Soon, there will not be a speaker and minority leader per se in the House of Representatives, but just recognizing that there may be a tie. And then the other two changes that it makes were recommendations brought forward by the Legislative Coordinating Commission, since they would be staffing and supporting this. This would require the chair of this particular working group be one of the legislative members. And then it would also just require that the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board must provide research and technical assistance if the working group needs it. So pretty, like I said, not anything earth-shattering, but important changes to make.
And so, just for clarification, the chair would be elected from the members of the board? Or in other words, the board would elect their own chair?
That is correct. So to clarify, this is a working group, not a board, but the working group would elect, it would be one of the legislative members, and there will be members appointed by each caucus within the legislature, and one of those members would be elected the chair. And I can't necessarily speak to the exact reasons, but that was a request put forward by the LCC.
Did you wish to move your amendment?
Yeah, yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move, I'm a member of the committee, I will move the A2 amendment.
Questions? Seeing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Amendment passes. Author, proceed.
I don't, if there are any other questions, I have a brief closing, but nothing else to add.
Seeing no discussion, Representative Vernick.
Get out of it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You're right. I don't have to, but I just, as a somebody who ran for school board and the challenges facing filing your campaign finance reports, I can attest to why I think this is a good idea. It was really hard. You know, you call the school district and they maybe didn't know. They say call the county, and the county is like, well, it's the school district. And so I appreciate you bringing this bill forward, because I do think there's a way to improve it, especially as someone who has run in a school board race before. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And the chair also has served on a school board, so I have some comprehension of the nonpartisan race versus the partisan. Representative Altendorf. Seeing no further question, anyone from the audience? I approve of the discretion of the campaign finance board person. You're always here to give advice and answer questions. Well, then I would then lay over House File 71 for possible, as amended, for possible inclusion.
I'm sorry, just one last thing. I forgot to mention, there is a fiscal note on the bill as well, if members are interested. So, thank you.
Well, thank you. And for members, that type of fiscal note tends to be the cost of per diem or mileage for this few members on the board. So it sort of pales before most of our bills. Next would be House File 993. And I see the author approaching. If there's anyone wishing to testify, please take one of the seats at the testifier table or behind it. The author can introduce yourself and begin introducing your bill.
All right. Thank you, Chair Quam. My name is Representative Jimmy Gordon, District 28A, and I've got a bill that I'd like to move before the committee. It's HF 993. This is a simple bill that would help Minnesotans know about all of their voting options. This bill would require local governments and the Secretary of State to post the temporary voting locations online, which will make it easier for citizens to find out about where these opportunities for voting are at. So it's pretty much as simple as that.
Any member questions, comments? The bills today seem to be fairly short.
5 days, if anybody wanted to ask that one. But
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the author for bringing this bill before us. I guess my question is just if the author has contemplated, you know, what happens if the polling place for the general election changes between when the Secretary of State or the county would be required to, like, publish the polling place location. Does that make sense?
Would nonpartisan staff What restrictions are there for, are there currently anything in regards to a change of polling location after the, what, 46 days or so of voting start?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lee, so there are procedures in current law related to changing polling places in the event of an emergency or some sort of catastrophic event that requires a designated location to be moved before Election Day, after it's been noticed, but before Election Day actually occurs. That's a separate section of statute. This bill in particular is dealing with the ability of county auditors and municipal clerks to establish effectively a pop-up temporary location. So these aren't the sort of standard polling place locations that will be open on Election Day. These are temporary locations that appear before Election Day for certain types of early and absentee voting. So that's the notice that the author is proposing here relates to those temporary locations as opposed to the Election Day designated locations.
And I should say that this is already, Mr. Chair, but I should say that a lot of this is already in Subdivision 7 of the underlying law, too, and so it's really just more of a clarification than anything else.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, I mean, my goal is also to reduce confusion. And so, I have another bill I'm drafting, which I'm working on with various other stakeholders. And I think my question here is, can we make sure that there's a distinction between the primary and the general election locations? Because I know here, like, we know there's a special election tomorrow, but a lot of people actually, don't. And so I just... my question is, how do people know these are temporary? And, if we're posting locations for the primary election, how do people know that, it's just the primary? And then what happens if we've posted information for the general election and then, that changes, after the primary? Does that question make sense to nonpartisan?
Mr. Gearing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lee. It does make sense that topic is not being addressed by this bill. That's kind of how I would respond to that.
Representative Lee?
No, I'm good then. Thanks.
Any comment from the author?
No, that's okay. All I've got.
I know. Okay. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Gordon. Was this your first bill?
Yeah.
Did you bring treats?
I did not. I forgot. I probably should have brought pizza, I suppose.
To the author.
Yeah, exactly.
I know.
They were sounding supportive. And then...
I'll get you another day, I promise.
We will be here all spring. So I think in a bipartisan show, and also with staff, we would love treats. But in all seriousness, I appreciate this in just the idea of more transparency, and also to your point of having a place where people can go and look and find it. One thing, and this is an unsolicited but a friendly suggestion, I think some of the questions and concerns have been raised, or questions more, of making sure that there's that for voter clarity, right? People know if you're posting it ahead of time that this is a primary election or a general election, and where it sits, where this particular bill sits in statute. It would be helpful, and I would say before, as this bill goes forward, as we talk about going in the omnibus, be helpful to consult with and work with the Secretary of State's folks just to make sure. I know that they're doing some of this already, but I also know that some of this may fall on the counties and the cities. Mm-hmm. But just in order to get the bill in the shape that I think you wanted and the goals that I share, which are transparency and avoiding confusion, that is my suggestion, I think. It's a bill then, as it goes to its final mark, and by then we will have had treats, I think we'll be ready to vote for it.
To the author, I think clarifying of what data is posted, so the location and the dates at which it is going to be open, the hours at which it's going to be open, I think that would clarify the issue of is it a primary, general, et cetera, because the dates would be... self-evident there.
And I think that language is, Mr. Chair, I think that language is in there already, actually, and those changes. So.
Okay, so.
But to your point, I will definitely take that into consideration, too.
Representative Greenman, so if Lee, if it has the dates and time and location, I'm not sure what else you can do to stop confusion other than adding in some verbiage that, you know, after the election is complete, it'll be removed. I mean, and this is being laid over. So, but I think it's a pretty straightforward, Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just say, I think I also don't, I'm not an expert in sort of human-centered design and how things are designed for clarity. And I think that both our Secretary of State folks, our county folks who spend a lot more time thinking about it. My suggestion is just, I think we have the same goals. And so leaving it to the experts and, you know, their consultants or whoever really focuses on how voter information is absorbed by people is the, you know, we can be over prescriptive in statutes sometimes. I think we all suffer from that, but there are, my suggestion is mostly just working with the folks who are already thinking about this to make sure that it will work with voter clarity and information in mind.
Any Absolutely. Further questions? Any closing with the author?
No, I would just close that I completely agree. I think, you know, the more eyes we can get on this, the better, and we want to avoid any unintended consequences and any confusion. So, no, thank you guys. Appreciate it.
And then I will lay over House File 993 for possible inclusion. Thank you. Next is the distinguished author of House File 1943. I think there was a movie or something like that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Greenman.
I believe that I just heard from Representative Ekam that there is a new rule that non-voting members have to bring treats. So I'm wondering if you're willing to enforce that rule.
Representative Greenman, I believe that was in the secret codex of the committee.
I believe there's a rule not to kick non-voting members when they're already down.
if anyone wishes testify,
cranky.
Please proceed. That's right. I will move House File 1943 before the committee. And author, please proceed with the introduction.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, voting members of the committee. So in 2024, Minnesota received $1 million in federal funds under Title I, Section 101 of the Help America Vote Act, or HAVA. You'll probably be hearing that acronym a lot. So for those at home, HAVA is the Help America Vote Act, a federal law. So these grants are intended to be used for the administration of elections for federal office, including to enhance technology and to make election security improvements. In HAVA, there's a 20% state match requirement, so that's what this bill represents. It's just one sentence long, allocates $200,000 in fiscal year 2026 from the general fund to the HAVA account. That's really all it does. Honored to have Secretary of State Steve Simon here to speak about it as well.
So, HAVA. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Steve Simon, Minnesota Secretary of State. Thank you, Representative Freiberg, for this. This is traditionally a bipartisan, nonpartisan bill, I would say. Bottom line is, as Representative Freiberg said, we're asking for $200,000 in one-time money, so no tails. This is just a one-shot deal. Mr. Chair, you're very familiar with it, but just for the record, as Representative Freiberg said, the Help America Vote Act, or HAVA, was passed in 2002. It was a broadly bipartisan response to the 2000 elections. It meant a lot of things to a lot of people, but the federal government from time to time will appropriate funds under the HAVA banner, basically, to the states. This has been going on since it was first passed in 2002. But in 2018, something interesting happened, which is they repurposed the purpose or the money to go for election security purposes. That started in 2018. So it provides states with additional resources to improve the administration of elections for federal office, including to enhance technology and make certain election security improvements. So since the first HAVA dollars were appropriated, a state match has been required. And Congress, on a bipartisan basis, again, has always asked states to have some skin in the game. At one time it was 10%, now it's 20% match. So they'll give, in this exact case, this exact example is they'll dole out $1 million to Minnesota, but there's a catch. In order to unlock those funds, we've got to come up with $200,000. So they'll give you the million, but you have 2 years to come up with the $200,000. So in April of 2024, they gave us the $1 million. We have 2 years from then, that's April of 2026, to come up from the legislature with the $200,000. So in the history of this kind of appropriation, we've always gotten the money, sometimes later than other times. But really every state gets the money one way or another, and we're respectfully asking to get this appropriation from you as well. Again, it's a one-time cost in fiscal year 2026, and they're going to be used, these funds, for three primary purposes. First, to support the cybersecurity infrastructure of the office and the system it maintains, to continue funding our election security navigator team, which provides support to county election officials across the state, and to advance the rewriting of the statewide voter registration system, the rewriting of the code, the redoing, the revamping, the modernizing of SVRS. That's where the money goes. It's those three things. I should point out we are rigorously and regularly audited by the federal government on these funds. We have to do periodic reports. They're open to you and everyone else in the public, so they watch very carefully. We have to account for every penny of how that money is spent. And you're welcome, if you want, to re-audit it, but they already do that on a federal basis. So with that, members, I respectfully ask for your support. Happy to take any questions.
Well, thank you for that and for reminding us of we're going to be doing a voting on audit topics coming up in a few weeks. Has there ever been any issues with, because I know that the budget update came out $160 million more negative than what it was, and I think $113 million of that was because I think it was MDH, but it was federal dollars that were not appropriately utilized, and the federal government is grabbing back the $113 million. And so I understand the, we've got a history of where we've had that happen, but we haven't had that happen to any of the HAVA dollars. Is that okay? That's
Mr. Chair, if I may. Just for the record, to be clear, that's never happened with us, with our office, with this HAVA dollars. But you're right, the federal government, with these one-time grants, if they see that a state, any state, is not using the money for the purposes for which it was appropriated, they will yank it back. They will claw that money back. They will also claw it back if we don't put up the 20% match.
Thank you. Representative Davis had a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Secretary of State, for being here. You say specifically, who is it that does that audit that you're referring to?
Simon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Davis, it's the EAC, the Election Assistance Commission. Right.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Can we get a copy of the latest audit report?
Secretary?
Mr. Chair, happy to do that, yes.
Okay.
All the states have to do this. It's mandatory, yes.
Thank you.
Anything further, Representative Davis?
I do. So according to EAC, in fiscal year 2022-2023, they allocated roughly $1.2 million for the state of Minnesota. Right. Did the state of Minnesota request or receive any of that funding from 2022-2023?
Secretary Sandler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Davis, yes. Every time Congress has appropriated this money, which is roughly every couple of years or so, it's usually about $55 million, $60 million, sometimes $75 million. We just get a pro rata share based on population. But yes, we have always received our pro rata share every time that Congress has appropriated that money.
Representative Davis.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Secretary, did we receive the full amount that was allocated?
Secretary Simon.
Yes. Mr. Chair and Representative Davis, yes, we did.
Okay.
Representative Davis.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Chair Quam, and this is for the Secretary of State. I just had a question then. For 2020, could you speak a little bit, like, what kind of formula was used for those grants to the counties and municipalities? And then also just moving forward then into the future, would you use that same formula or would you see changes to it?
Mr. Secretary.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Altendorf. Yeah, you're talking about the 2020 funds in particular. Yeah, so the formula, that it's strictly population-based, as I recall, for how we get the money. I think what you're referring to is then once we get the money, how do we share it with counties? Well, some of the money we keep, that's Congress's design, and so we use it to fund things like our Security Navigator program. But we also, you're right, give grants to, have time to time, from time to time, have given grants to the counties. And that formula, as I understand it, and here's where, Ms. Freeman, I don't want to, I want to make sure I'm giving the proper information in terms of the formula.
Ms. Freeman.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Nicole Freeman, Office of the Secretary of State. Thank you, Representative Altendorf and Chair Quam. So 2020 wasn't the year that our most recent year. 2021 was a year where $3 million were appropriated through this process. And for that process, then our office had two phases where in 2022 we had two grant phases to get this money out to counties. And so that was based on, yes, there was a sort of a floor. So I believe it was $20,000, excuse me, $20,000 across the board. And then based on census data for likely eligible population, which I believe is similar data to what's used for each state to get their share, then dollars were appropriated out based on that. Yep.
Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Chair Quam. And so just to follow up, but I'm not sure which one. So I think I heard Secretary of State, you said that, you know, it was like population based. And so can you just confirm, is more dollars going to those? But my question really lies in, will we use the same kind of formula going forward? Because let's just say a heavily populated county has a very high percentage of voter turnout. So could we have some room in that where we're diverting the dollars to a county that maybe doesn't have, if that's our goal, is voter turnout? I'm just wondering, could you specify, is this only a population-based formula?
Ms. Freeman.
Thank you. So in 2021, it was the dollars that were allocated and granted out in 2022 were based on a formula that had a floor of $20,000 for every county, and then it was based on not voter turnout, but was based on, so excuse me if I misspoke before, but it was based on census data of likely eligible voting population. And so that was a based on population. What our office intends to use this latest grant allocation for is what the secretary mentioned a few minutes ago, which is the modernization of the statewide voter registration system, the cyber navigator program within our office, excuse me, security navigator program within our office, as well as funding some cybersecurity pieces that support the systems that we currently operate. So our online tools as well as the statewide voter registration system.
Secretary Simon, just a quick for offline data. Representative Altendorf isn't the only one that's been curious about. There are many activities, and some of the funding comes from NGOs or I guess wealthy people have donated for get out the vote type or voter access. I think Zuckerman had some that was in some states. But in general, understanding if we're trying to increase voter turnout, is the money going to counties that are below the state average for voter turnout as opposed to, you know, those that are above the state average, you know, and that kind of information offline if you can get to the committee, because I've had people ask those, Mr. Secretary.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. All I know is what you know is what's been publicly reported. We don't, you know, when you're talking about, you said Mark Zuckerberg, I think. All I know is what's been publicly reported about where they spend their money and what their criteria are. It could be him. It could be any number of other groups. I mean, we have a voter outreach operation ourselves, but it's totally separate from what you just described.
So, Mr. Secretary, for clarification, your efforts, the Secretary of State's efforts to increase voter turnout, if we can understand where those dollars are going, mm-hmm. and also have the maybe the last three, no, make the last four elections, what counties have in their percentage turnout, so we can see how effective that has been over the last several elections and improving turnout, and where maybe there hasn't been the improvement, for future. Because as we do this, omnibus bill, there might be some things to try and focus on improving on that. But it's good to see you before the committee. So that I happen to see you, so I figured I'd add that question.
Fine.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, yeah, we can get you data about turnout in the counties. Remember, we have a small operation. We have two full-time people who do that kind of voter information work. Much of it is, as you'll probably hear from them in the session, just getting information about the who, what, why, when, why, and where, the rules, right? What are the rules? Where do you go? Who do you ask? All that kind of thing. That's a huge part of the effort, which ramps up, of course, near election time. So it's hard to isolate sort of, their time or where they're spending their time. It's really a statewide effort. So if they're pushing something to go to public libraries, for example, it's hard to sort of balance that out. Or if there's an initiative to reach, other folks in government in the various counties, that's done very equally throughout the state. But we'll see what we can come up with that's county-based that might satisfy your curiosity.
Thank you. And to the distinguished author, I apologize. It's just that on the occasion we get the Secretary of State, I was looking for more information. You had some a comment you would – go ahead.
Sure, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Yeah, no, that's – I certainly – Chair's prerogative to take the conversation whichever direction. But I did just want to mention that this bill deals with HAVA funding. HAVA funding is not used to for any sort of voter turnout, boosting voter turnout or anything like that. It's used for cybersecurity software, technical improvements to the statewide voter registration system, and the security navigator team. So just wanted to, just wanted to make it clear that this bill has nothing to do with voter turnout or anything, operations or anything along those lines.
Well, thank you. And I tried to indicate that it wasn't on this bill. It was just because we had a testifier that knew Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm disappointed you didn't also ask our Secretary of State if he would bring treats. I thought that that's where you were going to go with that. But in all seriousness, on this, I have a few questions, which is because I think it seems like we share – I would say, and I think the fact that we passed a bipartisan bill last year to increase resources through the voter fund through our cities and counties, I hope that this committee agrees actually our counties and cities probably need more resources to do this work, and that's something that we're working on. And this is a good opportunity to get federal dollars to help that. I'm wondering how, and I probably should know this, but are these – HAVA funds that go to the cities and counties, the part of it that does, is that through the voter fund or is that a different formula? And how
Mr. Secretary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Greenman, this is different than the voter fund. The voter fund formula is one that the counties through MACO and other groups came together with. It's one that's been used for the last few years. I think they all find it to be fair. This one's a little bit different. As Ms. Freeman described, it's based on voter eligible population.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I have, having been on this committee now, this is my fifth year, we talked a lot about HAVA. I think that it's always been, and we've always gotten there because it's an important way to bring resources into the state that go to modernize our election security, election apparatus. And so thank you, Representative Freiberg, Lead Freiberg. I will not troll you anymore, certainly. I know that it was daylight savings time, and that's a particularly hard day for you. But with that, Madam, Mr. Chair, I support this bill. Thank you for bringing it.
Thank you. And you're mentioning that how many years. My first time serving on the GovOps Elections Committee was with the Secretary of State. So we've, you know, we've got a wide range of information and background amongst the committee. And if any of the members, you know, freshman members especially, if you have questions that pop up, you know, you can pass it on to us, to the Secretary of State. And frankly, don't feel as if any question is, you know, embarrassing to ask. Those are the ones we do in private, you know, offline. But you need to know some of the intricacies to be able to understand what we can do, what we can't, and what portion, like the clarification on HAVA, how those dollars are spent. I'm speaking a little bit more because, well, that clock indicates that they added 2 hours ahead for that. But no, we've had an efficient meeting. Representative Davis has one additional question.
Yeah, just one, maybe two follow-ups, but probably just one, because I think maybe it's something I'm not understanding. Mr. Secretary, so Nicole Freeman, I've got a letter in front of me from your office from Nicole Freeman. And again, maybe I'm just not understanding, but it says, in addition, the Secretary of State may accept federal funds for election purposes. This is a letter to the legislators. The Office of Secretary of State is required to report by each January 15th the total amounts received in the preceding calendar year, the sources of those funds, and the uses to which those funds were or will be put to use. As required by Section 5.38, the Office of Secretary of State reports that it did not apply for, accept, or receive any grant or other funds authorized by 5.38 in calendar year 2023. So was it calendar year 2022 then? Is that what I'm misunderstanding, or what's going on there?
Ms. Freeman?
I'm going to see if Ms. Freeman can.
Secretary.
Mr. Chair, I think Ms. Freeman, can you just clarify the dates?
Ms. Freeman.
I think that we would have to look at those reports and when the funds exactly were distributed or not distributed, and based on when that report was filed. So, yeah.
Okay, and the only reason why I'm asking is because, like, in sorry, Mr. Chair, the letter you're saying we did receive, and according to EAC, it was allocated $1.2 million, but this letter seems to indicate that we didn't get any of those funds. So if you don't know right now, that's fine, but could you get back to us on that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, yes. And I have to say, one of the things, and Representative Davis, one of the things that's makes it a little more difficult with HAVA is we don't know. It's not like clockwork. Sometimes they'll go 2 or 3 years without allocating any money. Sometimes it's 1 or 2 years in a row. There are rumors about the continuing resolution up for debate as soon as today about whether there will be election funds in there for another batch of HAVA money. I just had a phone call, and there's a rumor about what will or won't be in it. Sometimes we don't get notice, but what I can say, Representative Davis, is every time they've been allocated, we've accepted them. It's all on record, so we'll just have to get the date straight and get that back to you.
Representative Davis, thank you, Mr. Secretary. We hear lots of rumors, and we try only to give the facts. In response, any other? Seeing none, closing.
It's a good bill, and I appreciate your consideration.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Secretary.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Freeman.
With that, the chair lays House File 1943 over for possible inclusion. Any questions or comments from the committee? Even though, according to that clock, we ran long, we actually ran short. So thank you, and we are adjourned.